No kidding.
That's got to be pretty embarrassing.
Yeah, well, you know.
Was Clemente the toughest on you?
But he was, you know, I used to get him out, but I would say, I would have to say I probably got him out more times than he hurt me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have more trouble sometimes against, Bill Russell with the Dodgers, who was a popcorn hitter.
Yeah, sure was.
God damn, man, he used to hurt me. You know, he'd hit a home run. He hit two or three home runs off me, you know. Just stupid mistake, you know. Be ahead of him and then come out over the plate with a ball that, you know, he should throw. And hit it out of the park on you. And let me see. And the guy who managed the Mets a couple years ago.
David Johnson?
No, not Johnson.
Harrelson?
Harrelson.
Yeah.
You know, same that kind of hitter. And Del Maxwell with St. Louis, you know. And then...
You're naming a lineup that most guys would like to face.
Yeah, really. Those kind of guys used to really give me fits sometimes, you know. But I think it was... Just not thinking, you know.
You think you were letting up on them?
No, I wasn't letting up. They just, you know, sometimes I think pitchers get out there. John Smoltz's got a bad habit of doing it, rearing back, thinking that what he does throw extremely hard. Like, you know, heck, I'll just throw it right by him, you know. And first thing you do, you lose location of the ball, and you get it up into where the guy's power's at. And then it really doesn't matter how hard you're throwing. The guy's going to hit you, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that couple inches difference is location is all it takes.
That's all it takes, you know? And I think John, after the All-Star game last year, you know, he began to see that, and that's when he changed him. But that was what I do a lot of times. I just think, you know, hell, I can throw it by him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd lose location of the ball, and it would be too good a pitch, you know? Riddle of White used to tell me that, you know, that, you know, don't, there's times that you got to try to throw it by a hitter, but most of the time he says you got to learn to pitch, you know, and have control of your pitch, you know.
Yeah, and you've got to do it all the time.
That's right. If you want to be consistent, you got to do it all the time.
I've got a son who was a left-handed college pitcher, and I wish he could hear you talking. He'll go through the first six, and he'll pitch. He's got to have control. He can't throw real hard. He's got to have control, and he puts it in a teacup. And he gets to 7, 8, and 9 almost invariably in the third inning. He gives up a couple of runs because then he said it. He's going to coast, and he just tries to throw it by him, and he can't throw it by my grandmother.
Yeah.
And he does that and every time without fail. He stops being a pitcher and just goes out there and tries to get through it easy and invariably gives up 3 or 4 hits.
Yeah, there's a difference. You got to be a pitcher, not a thrower.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Whitlow Wyatt, I always go back to him because he used to preach, you know, when you're in the big leagues, you got to be a pitcher, not a thrower. Anybody can be a thrower, but very few can be pitchers. And then to be a pitcher, then you got to be able to, you know, location of the ball. And once you get that down, you know, when you started out talking to me when in Austin, Texas and stuff,
mm-hmm.
See, I had good speed, good fastball, really good breaking ball, but I had bad location on my pitches, you know, and I couldn't control my pitches, you know. And then when I did have success most of the time, it was because virtually I was overpowering the hitter, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I stepped up to AAA, that, you know, the competition gets better.
Oh, yes.
Then you got to get better. And see, and then to break away from AAA, you've got to get to the big leagues. That's where the hitters are really good.
That last step is a very big one.
It is, you know, and that's where you really got to come up with your pitches and be able to control them. And I was thrown across my body a little bit in AAA, and that was one of the things in spring training why it told me that, you know, until you break yourself of the habit of throwing across your body, you will never be able to keep, you know, the ball down where you need it.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally broke myself. habit, and it was like I just opened a different door, you know. And I, all of a sudden, I could throw strikes anytime I wanted them, you know. I mean, I was down where I needed to be, and that's what virtually that one little thing really that put me in the big leagues right there, you know. And then once I got to the big leagues, I had a fastball curveball, and the first trip around was fine. Then they said, well, he's got two pitches, you know. I didn't have a good changeup, so I started working on a changeup curveball, and that really helped me right there. But I see today pitchers, I think it's more the organization, the catchers calling, or the way they use more junk pitches, you know, the change-ups, fastball change-ups, than they did years ago, you know?
It sure seems to be.
You know, I watch these guys today, and I really regret that I didn't do it more myself, and it's only my own fault, but catchers wouldn't call it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would go back to your bread-and-butter pitch, your fastball-curveball, you know, or if you're a fastball-sliderball pitcher, you know, they would automatically go back to those when you get in trouble. Well, you know, when you get in trouble, a lot of times a good hitter up there, you go to a fork ball or a palm ball. Back then they used to throw, or change up curve. You throw somebody that, and when you're behind in the count, nine times out of ten, he's gonna pop it up, and it's all gonna be over with. You know?
I think there's a lot more thought going into it than there. It seemed to be pretty mechanical several years ago, but now I think there's a little bit more mental processes used.
I think you're right. You know, just sitting here watching the game and trying to analyze what they do a lot of times, you know, I think it's a lot. You're right. There is a lot more to it.
When I was a kid, I was a pitcher. I was good enough to at least. The Giants invited me up to Seal Stadium one time to look at me. So I was fairly successful. But I remember I had a fabulous curveball. I had a great curveball. If I could throw balls as fastball as well as I could throw a curveball, I probably would have done some. And my catcher, you know, anytime there was trouble, he'd call for the curveball. Everybody always knew it, but I never thought about it. You know, that was the pitch, and, you know, they'd be sitting there waiting for it. Somewhere, guys like... this fellow with Pittsburgh, the manager, Leland, and fellows like him, even Mock, they started thinking somewhere along the line, which is I don't think they did 20 and 30 years ago.
Yeah.
It makes a big difference.
Yeah, you're right. You know, catchers are so valuable to a young team, you know. I mean, especially if you got a young pitching staff, you know.
Right.
You need that good seasoned veteran catcher there. Those are the guys who can pick those young pitchers up by the seat of the pants and bring them through the game, you know.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things, you know, you brought out that I pitched good baseball down in Houston, and one of the main reasons for that was I pitched to one of the best catchers I ever pitched to down there, and that was Johnny Edwards.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was a tremendous defensive catcher and a game caller, you know.
His offensive days were pretty much behind him by that point.
Yeah, but as far as control of the game, John had complete control of the ball game, you know, and not only for running the game, but calling the game for the pitcher out there. Because I know a lot of times, you know, you'd be standing there looking out, you're rubbing the ball up, and you're thinking, oh, this is a curveball, you know, and the count might be two balls and a strike, which is not a curveball, would not be a breaking ball situation. Turn right around, lean over to look in for the sign, and he's calling curveball. So, you know, you're really working right when you're doing that. And I used to tell my wife, it was amazing tonight. You know, I'd lean down and think in a pitch in my mind and look up, open my eyes, and look in it. And Edwards was calling that pitch, you know. It was almost like he was reading my mind, you know.
And he was behind the plate every cotton-picking day down there for you guys. He may have missed a dozen games a year or something like that.
Well, he was something else.
And he was not a kid. He must have been, what, early 30s anyhow, wasn't he, at that point?
John was 4 years older than me.
Okay. So yeah, that's mid-30s.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's. He was all right. He was a very underrated ball player.
Yes, he was. He was a really good ball player.
Who we talked about a lot of pitching. Who was the best pitcher you saw?
Best pitcher.
You talked about Koufax, and that's the answer most of the guys from your era give. But
Koufax is a great pitcher.
There were some good ones.
Bond was a great pitcher. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't pitch against him, but you know, pitching with him, he was a master on the mound. And God, he didn't throw hard enough to make a red mark on you, but he could thread a needle, you know. He'd throw you that little slider and that mediocre fastball, and then he'd turn that screwball over on the block on the outside corner of the plate, you know. And one of the things, too, I think back then was the umpires respected him for the way he didn't. He pitched pretty fast. He always threw strikes. And you take a pitcher that pitches quick and throws strikes, you're going to get strikes, even
yeah.
when they're not strikes. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
The umpire is going to give you a lot of pitches. And Spahny was always there in the strike zone, you know. And he was a great pitcher. And then,
you had Gibson?
Gibson was a good pitcher.
Bunning?
Jim Bunning, you're right. Jim
yeah.
Bunning, Jim Maloney over at
Cincinnati. Oh, yeah.
Who was the one that I'm thinking of at Pittsburgh was?
Bob Veal?
No, it wasn't Veal. It was before him. Vernon Law.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then they had, Juan Pizarro.
Yeah, for a year or two there, he was fantastic.
The Cubs had, Ernie Broglio with the Cubs.
Yeah, for a year or so, yeah.
And,
Marichal, was at that point?
No, when I said Juan Pizarro, I meant Juan Marichal.
Oh, Marichal, okay, because Pizarro had a couple of really good years. But,
And then I remember Nolan Ryan was with the Mets.
Yeah.
Jeez, he could put him inside a garage and he couldn't hit the wall. I remember him coming. Actually, where were we playing at? I guess maybe it was here in Atlanta. God, I think he walked like 14, 15 one night. You know? And, he'd be in the seventh inning, walk 12 men, and be throwing just as hard as he did when he first started. You know?
That's amazing.
150 pitches.
That's amazing, dude.
And the guy's still pitching.
Yeah.
That's the amazing part.
Yeah, I guess if he hadn't been hurt, he'd still be doing that. I guess he's kind of lost a little bit right now, but that's fantastic.
You know, there was one pitcher out there with Jack Sanford with the Giants.
Yeah, he could have. He was awfully tough for.
You know.
Yeah.
But I guess if you're going to say two of the best pitchers you ever watched pitch. I'd have to say they would, you know, in different games. I'd have to say Koufax when he pitched against us and then sitting there watching Warren Spahn pitch, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
I think if you took those two to build your staff around, you'd be in pretty good shape.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You sure would. You know.
Well, you've been out of baseball for a while now.
About August of 72 or July of 72.
So we're right at 20 years.
Yeah.
You still get fan mail?
Oh, yeah. Get it. I just got three letters tonight, postcards to sign tonight. I get about, I would say probably average maybe 30 a month.
So that's pretty much one a day on the air. Yeah.
You know, some days you won't get any, and then some days you get three or four, you know.
That's what all autograph requests?
Yeah.
Do you sign for them?
Pardon?
Do you sign them all?
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
You know, this guy's signing this $5 and $10 a piece for these autographs. That's a sore spot. You know, I don't understand that.
I talked to a fellow well before your time. I don't know if you remember Al Zarrilla, American League outfielder.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, he's out in Honolulu now, but I spoke with him last week and asked him, And he said, you know, shoot, what the heck is an autograph? You know, he's got a 19-cent ballpoint pen. It doesn't cost him anything. It makes him feel good that somebody remembers, and it makes somebody feel good that he signed it.
Yeah.
And he said the same thing you did. It's a sore spot with him that people are charging for it.
If it wasn't for the fans and these young boys and girls coming to the games to watch them, you know, the ball players wouldn't be anything, you know?
Well, one way or the other, you know, regardless of whether it's TV money or parking lot money or whatever, the fans are paying the salaries.
That's exactly right, you know. And that's why I say it, that's just a sore spot with me. These guys charge for these. And then I got a letter from some company in New Jersey or something here. Oh, it was the beginning of last year. Want me to sign a contract with them that they would sell my autographs, you know?
Yeah.
And I enjoy it. I love baseball. And to me, it's like, you got a 19-cent ballpoint pen, it gives me a lot of kick to sign the thing for them.
Sure, that's great. That's a great attitude.
You know, and that's the way I was at Ducks Unlimited Tuesday night. And there was three people came over there and asked me for an autograph. Hell, I didn't know them, but somebody said, that's so-and-so. He used to pitch with the Braves, and they came over there. You know, I mean, I'm more than happy to sign it.
Sure, that's great.
You know?
Now, somebody, who was it? Woody Fryman lives right up the road from me here, about 15 miles.
Woody Fryman,
yeah. He said...
good pitcher with Philadelphia.
Boy, I guess he was when he played, and he always will be. He's running a 500-acre farm with his two sons right now. He said that he got a letter. I think he said it was from the Major League Players Association, advising him that he should be charging for autographs. Was that who it was from? I think that's who he said it was from. He said he threw it away. He says, that's silly. If somebody wants his autograph, they're welcome to it. But I'm sure he said it was a Major League Players Association. Yeah, that's got to be the wrong attitude.
Yeah, you're right. Because if it wasn't for the fans and everything, and it's a shame that that baseball has got to the point where it costs so much. They were saying here the other day it costs like for a family of four to go to a Braves game like $85 or something for parking, the tickets, the hot dog, and you know a couple of minor souvenirs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, an average working day person, he's going to go one time.
That's all you can do.
Family,
yeah.
You know, that's a shame. You know,
that'll cost us out to the Reds are the closest game. We'll go watch Louisville before we go to Cincinnati. We can go to Louisville for get excellent seats for $354 a piece, and the hot dogs are half the price. The drinks are half the price. The parking is one third the price. To take. My two boys and myself, three of us, it's going to cost us $65 to go to Cincinnati. It's going to cost us about $40 to go to Louisville.
Yeah.
And it's just, and it's the same distance, you know, no difference in gas.
Yeah. They're losing it right there, you know. I know that, you know, cost of everything has gone up, but still, you know, when I was a player up down in Houston, I used to preach it when we go to the meetings. You know, they always want these kids, they always say the kids just, you know, need to won't be in the ball game. I said, why don't the owners like it? All the outfield bleachers and some of these teams that are not drawing good,
mm-hmm.
open them up for 50 cents, you know, 50 cents.
Great.
A person and let the kids come to the game. You know, charge the old man and the kids 50 cents a piece to bring the kids to the game. I mean, what the heck? It's better to fill the stands up at 50 cents.
Yeah, 1,000 people.
Have it locked up and nobody there.
1,000 people at 50 cents a piece is a whole lot more money than 10,000 people that don't pay.
That's right.
Yes, goodness gracious, that's an excellent idea. Why in the world don't they do something like that?
You know, I used to bring that up, and, you know, they'd say, well, they would take that under consideration.
Yeah, of course.
That's as far as it went, you know. Well, they never, you know, to me, baseball is a kid's game. I was down there with last night with my grandson. I got an 11-year-old grandson. He plays and watching him play, and he's a good little ball player.
Good.
And that's what the baseball game is for.
You know? Sure it is.
It's for them 11, 10, 11, 7, 8-year-old kids, you know.
Yep. I've got an 8-year-old. That's the 20-year-old. He's in T-ball now, and it's just a blast to see him play.
Yeah.
I mean, most of them don't know which end of the ball is up, but so what?
You know.
They're having fun.
Yeah, as long as he's having fun.
Yeah. Did you save souvenirs from your career?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, I got a. I got a complete uniform from the old Milwaukee Braves. I got my wife. My first wife was killed in a car accident about 11 years ago, and I remarried her about 5 years ago. And she collects antiques and stuff, and we heard this antique thing, and she was. This guy was telling about a uniform. You know, he was talking to somebody about a uniform, and he said to the guy, he says, yeah, I got a bunch of these uniforms here. And he pulls this uniform up, and it was a Houston Astros shooting star uniform, which they don't have anymore.
Oh, boy, yeah.
And he said, these are collector's items. And I was standing, I told my wife, I said, damn, that's the same uniform. That's the kind of uniform I used to wear when I was at Houston. And the guy heard me say that, you know. And he said, you used to wear one of those? I said, yeah. I said, when I pitched in Houston. He said, you pitched down there? He said, what's your name? He said, I said, Dane LeMaster. He said, this is your shirt.
No kidding.
I said, that's what I said, no kidding. Your number is 23, isn't it? And I said, yeah. My name is monogrammed in the top of it up there for cleaning, you know.
Yeah.
And so he matched the pants up, you know, pants and stuff back up together. So we bought the shirt, and then I got a complete Milwaukee Braves uniform, the one with the old zipper in it. That uniform is worth about $1,300.
I was going to say, I would have guessed $1,000. Yeah, those are really worth something.
Yeah, the guy told me, he asked me if I wanted to sell it. I said, nah, I keep it.
Yeah, oh, they're worth a fortune. The magazine this is going to appear in is, are you familiar with the Sports Collector's Digest?
No.
It's just what it says it is. It's geared to baseball card collectors and sports memorabilia collectors and autograph collectors. And one of the results of when this appears is you'll get an increase in your number of autograph requests for a period of 2 or 3 weeks. Gail Harris said he went from about 4 or 5 a week to over 100 in the first 3 weeks after his appearance. So you will get an increase, but we'll send you some copies of the magazine. You'll be amazed at some of the prices that you see for things in there. That stuff you probably could have had for free when you were playing.
Oh yeah, I mean there's a number. I got a lot of autographed baseballs. I got one. We played an old time. Well, we played against the Mets 1 year back when the World's Fair was going on, and they had an old timers game in there. And I think I got, that's on that baseball, there's 11 Hall of Famers on it.
Oh, boy.
You know, DiMaggio and Red Roof and Lefty Gomez. And God, I just, you name them, they're on that ball, you know.
Yeah, those things are worth hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, this one would be worth a lot of money because it's got, I think there's 11 Hall of Famers on it. Well, more than that now, Chris Bond's on there, and he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, sure is.
At the time. You know?
Yeah, those are things to hang on to, protect as much as you can. You know, maybe not the kids, but maybe the grandkids would like them or something.
Yeah. But I got a whole dresser drawer full of baseballs that I've kept in there.
Good. A lot of guys. Well, starting about the time you were playing, guys are becoming a little more aware and saving things. Before that, 40s and 50s. The guys say, well, you know, who ever thought about saving anything?
Yeah.
And it's a shame the things they didn't save. Now today, gee whiz, the guys, you know, they'll save a torn piece of grass if they think somebody famous stepped on it.
Yeah, it's amazing the collecting stuff, the different things. There was an article here in the Atlanta paper about this fellow that had this ball that was signed by Babe Ruth. It was
It was his 60th home run or something like, just in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw something about that in the.
I was talking to a lady at the Ducks Unlimited thing about it, and the person happened to be a personal friend of hers, and he's got it in a safety deposit box, and he turned the $200,000 down for the ball, wouldn't take it.
Well, I don't know. I might have to take $200,000.
I just have to think real good about that.
I'd be awful darn well off otherwise if I didn't.
The signature has been authentic that it is his and everything. So I don't know, you know.
Yeah. When I was a kid, we lived out in California for a few years, and Ty Cobb lived out there. And I found out, and I bugged my mother until she called him. She kept saying, you know, she was raised in Georgia, and she kept saying that, no, he was a mean old man, and he wouldn't. So she finally called him up, and he said, sure, bring him by. And so it took out that. I got his autograph just on a little piece of paper, and I've been offered $400 for it. And that's just a little, you know, scribbled on a piece of paper. So this is an amazing business. I'm not going to sell it. Heck, I don't need the $400. And it's something to remember.
Yeah, Ty Cobb. That's there wasn't that many signatures of him, around.
No, what they're doing nowadays, you'll see it when you get the magazine. The people are getting canceled checks from these people. You know, somebody somewhere has a box full of canceled checks. And they're selling those. That's something I really don't understand. But, I guess it's an authentic signature on a check especially. And there'll be, in almost every issue, there'll be somebody's canceled checks advertised. Tris Speaker, or Ty Cobb, or George Sisler, or somebody.
Is that right?
Yeah. I don't know where they get them. I guess from a state auction or something. I don't know where they get them. In fact, one fellow, who was it? Dooley Womack told me that he had...
Womack. He played with the Braves.
Yeah. I think for one part of a year there, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Heck of a talking machine, but a heck of a nice fella. He said somebody wrote him and asked him for one of his canceled checks. And he said he wasn't too sure about that. They had his checking account number on it and everything. And I kind of agree with him. I'm not real sure that's something that you'd want to do.
Yeah. No, there's a guy who wrote me one. A thing like that. He had Bobby Briggins, and then he sent me a photostat of Tony Cloninger, give him a cancel check for one penny, made out to a penny.
Yeah, but still, they've got your. That worries me that they would get your account number.
Yeah. I haven't sent it to him, but I mean, he sent me those things. Oh, it's been about a month ago, I guess. He sent it to me last year, and I just threw it in the trash,
No, Womack was with Houston. He wasn't with the Braves.
That's right.
Yeah. He was with Houston probably late 60s.
What is he doing now?
He's in the carpet business in South Carolina, I think it is, not far from you. And he agrees with you on the autograph situation. He says he went and did a card show and felt bad about doing it after he got there taking money for it. But he enjoyed meeting the fans, but he says he'll never do that again. And just a really enjoyable fellow to talk to.
Yeah, I remember him. Yeah, when you said that name, kind of rang a bell real quick,
Do you have any regrets from your career?
No.
Good.
No. It was only one.
What's that?
I was born 10 years too soon.
Oh, boy, weren't you, though? goodness gracious.
I told my mother, she's 83 years old, or 84 years old. I told her, Mother, I said, you really did me an injustice. And she looked at me really serious, and she said, what are you talking about? I said, you had me 10 years too soon.
Yep.
I said, yeah, if I'd been playing now, God.
Yeah, oh, man, you win 17 games today, you can rule the world with the money.
Yeah, I'll tell you, all you got to do is be a 500 pitcher, 12-12, and you get a unbelievable raises,
Oh, that guy that's been suspended now, that was on the Yankees, suspended for drug, Paris, yeah, when he was with the Braves, too, for a while. But he signed with the Yankees for $1.5 or $2 million after winning 9 games. One year?
Yeah.
Jesus, I could win 9 games at 50 years of age.
some of these salaries some of these guys make, they're ridiculous. So,
Yes.
But I guess that's the...
More power to them.
The way baseball goes now,
So you can't blame them if somebody's going to give you...
I mean, you got to make it while you can.
Yeah.
Because, heck, you'd be pitching today and step out there and hear something go wrong with your arm. Well, like the first baseman the Braves have got over here, what the hell's his name?
Sasky?
Yeah, he's got that equilibrium problem,
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he was a good ball player, and all of a sudden, bang, he can't play no more.
Yeah, that's a they keep saying he's trying to come back. I don't see how he's going to.
They haven't said anything about him for the last, I guess, the last month.
Yeah, it was back in the spring they were talking about him, yeah.
Yeah, it's been kind of quiet. I don't know if he's still working out every day with the club or not, you know.
Well, you got to give him a little credit, though. He's got the money. He could take it and go home. He's still trying. At least he was still trying.
Yeah. I do give him credit for that. That is, you know. But, no, I have no regrets, you know. It was a great game. It is a great game, and I really enjoyed it.
Would you do it all again?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah, I sure would.
I've never asked a person that question that said anything, but yes, that's great.
I'd do it again.
Okay. Well, Denny, this has been, I guess, probably as enjoyable an interview as I've done. I've probably done a couple hundred of these things, and this, I've a lot of them get a little tedious. It's like I ask a question, and the answer is yes, no, or don't remember, and then, you know, it's awful hard to make an intelligible interview out of those kind of answers. You have really been wonderful in your openness.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Give me your address, please.
It's 4833.
Uh-huh.
Carlene, Carlene, Way.
Okay.
Lilburn.
Yeah.
Georgia.
Okay.
30247.
Okay. Would you like to see a copy of this before I send it to the magazine?
Yeah, that's all right.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay, some fellas do.
Yeah, I think
you've not said anything.
No.
The only problem I've ever had, one fella who pitched for the Pirates when Kiner played, said that he hated to see a ball hit the left field because Kiner couldn't catch it, and if he did beat it in submission, the guys didn't stop running anyhow. They just kept going. And then he read that.